You're listening to Mitchell and Mercer. Now, in the studio, local mortgage and finance experts Tina Mitchell and Mike Mercer.
Welcome to the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer, the Sunday, February 24 show. I am Tina Mitchell, Mortgage Diva, and sitting to my left is my co-host, the Mortgage Master, Mike Mercer. How's it going over there?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Wonderful.
You having a good weekend?
Having a great weekend. Happy to be here in studio again for our Sunday show. Thank you for taking time with us to talk money. Mike and I are here every Sunday on 570 KVI at 2 p.m. Each week, we share expert advice and inside knowledge on how today's events in our local economy can affect our money. And we've got a few awesome guests today. Our first guest in studio, regular contributor to our show and works with a lot of our listeners learning how to protect their assets, is Janice Hammond with Sunrise Financial. Today, we are discussing with Janice how to prepare for your meeting with your financial advisor. So you definitely will want to stay tuned for our second segment with Janice. We also have return visitors, Jim Swanson and Eric Tinglem with Windermere Professional Partners. Jim and Eric specialize in the Pierce County market. They are experts for our Pierce County Tacoma market, and they're here to give us a market review. So, Mike, on that note, I think it's some time for Money Chat.
So here's what I got. I've got the 7 tax deductions you should not overlook. Figured it would be a good time to talk about this as people are getting ready to prepare their taxes. But this was an article that was written, on ABC News. The author of the article was Aaron Crow from credit.com. But basically says, you know, from housing costs to job hunting, here are 7 tax deductions people overlook, but you shouldn't. So listeners, beware. You know, the good thing about taxes is they're, you know, of course, they're only filed once a year, thank God. The bad thing is that it's almost impossible to really remember. I'm going through this right now as I'm getting ready to put my taxes together.
I'm just thinking, thank God I have a husband.
It's called delegate.
Taxes.
It's impossible to almost remember all the tax, you know, deductions that you qualify for each year. So, you know, credits come and go, obviously, and it's hard to remember them all. So, here's a little bit of advice. You know, while the IRS, of course, does all it can to help taxpayers determine which itemized deductions to apply to their taxes, there are enough possible tax deductions that it's easy to miss one or two. So the good news is that for most people who haven't, you know, had a major life change, whether it's having a child or, God forbid, losing a job or buying a house, getting married, et cetera, you know, filing taxes really shouldn't be too hard. You know, the bottom line for most taxpayers is that 2012 should mostly represent 2011 in the sense of, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of tax laws that were changed between those 2 years. So here are some of the tax deductions you don't want to overlook. Number one, medical costs. These include, you know, health insurance premiums, dental care, glasses, counseling, therapy. Do you have your pen out? You're writing it down.
I'm writing it down. Okay. I got number one.
Miles driven to medical appointments. You know, the medical expenses must add up to more than 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. And actually, for 2012 taxes. In 2013, that figure is going to raise to 10% of AGI. So long-term care insurance is deductible. Of course, subject to specific dollar amounts depending upon your age. Get this, weight loss, Jenny Craig, Nutrisystem.
No comments, Mike.
Who are the other big ones?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, weight loss programs are also deductible if undertaken as a treatment for a disease diagnosed by a physician. So I guess all you got to do is get your doctor to say that you...
So that food that I bought from Nutrisystem that I never ate...
You need a doctor's note, it sounds like. A doctor's note, you can write it off.
Okay, awesome.
So the second thing would be housing. Deducting mortgage insurance is a no-brainer, but other costs when buying a house can be deducted from taxes. And, you know, this is something that came into effect, right? It used to not be for mortgage insurance.
Yeah, well, it's funny because they took it, and I think a lot of people think they took it away. It ended in 2011, so they took it away. And I think a lot of people may not realize that not only did they bring it back, and it sounds like they're going to keep it, it's going to be kind of like a signature, like the interest deduction. But they actually prorated or proactivated from 2012. So where you didn't think you were going to get to write off mortgage insurance in 2012, consumers or homeowners may think that they could not, right, which they could.
So definitely talk to your CPA about that and go back. And if you need to amend those returns, make sure you can write that off. Points paid on an original mortgage and energy credits as well. So once you know, once you get past a mortgage, in the W-2, of course, it can become a lot more complicated, right, going through stuff. But definitely run that stuff by your CPA. Third would be education. Student loan interest is commonly missed. I didn't even think about that.
I didn't know that you could write off student loan.
Student loan interest is commonly missed. Yep.
It's been a long time since I've been a student, but.
Yep. Parents contributing to a child's college education can choose to take a tuition and fee deduction of up to $4,000 or can take tax credits. The American, I guess it's called the American Opportunity Tax Credit, is up for, it's up to $2,500 per student for the first 3 years of college. Sorry. And the lifetime learning credit is up to $2,000 per family for every additional year of college or graduate school. These are all things I never knew about. The next thing, non-cash charitable contributions. So deducting a cash contribution to a charity is easy enough, but too often, people don't accurately value non-cash contributions such as clothes. So make sure you determine a fair market value and don't value them for less than they're really worth. Other charitable deductions include expenses paid on behalf of a charity and, of course, donating appreciated stock. So the next thing, retirement. The American Taxpayer Relief Act of 2012 allows taxpayers to roll over funds from a regular 401k retirement account into a Roth account under the same plan. For people with IRAs, some miss the opportunity to contribute to it and don't realize that it's actually a deduction that doesn't need to be funded by December 31st of that tax year. So, of course, taxpayers have until April 14th of the following year to fund their IRA. Okay, next thing, job hunting. This was interesting. Qualifying expenses are deductible even if they didn't result in a new job being offered or accepted. So for those of you who have been out looking for jobs, these costs may include resumes, putting together resumes, postage, job counseling, employment agency fees. Never thought about that. Employment agency fees that you have to pay. Telephone charges and travel, for interviews that aren't being reimbursed by the prospective employer. You can write off all that stuff. They must exceed 2% of your adjusted gross income. To be deductible, you must be looking for work in the same trade or business that you've been in. So hunting expenses, job hunting expenses when looking for a job in a new field are not deductible. Okay, bad debt. This was really interesting. This caught my eye. Every loan that you make to somebody, right,
okay,
that they don't pay you back. So there's probably a lot of parents, maybe some grandparents, maybe some relatives out
really,
there.
You can write that off?
If you make a loan to somebody and they don't pay you back, you would qualify for the, quote, non-business bad debt deduction for individuals. Individuals and married couples can claim the deduction and get a loss of up to $3,000 per year when they loan someone money and they're not repaid.
So I wonder if it's going to affect the other person that actually didn't pay it back. Probably not, but
yeah, it's like what income, like income paid. So this non-business bad debt loss is deducted as a short-term capital loss, and they can carry forward any amounts that are not able to claim in the current year and reduce their taxable income in future years. So keep in mind, though, that you should send your tax return securely, of course, whether it's being e-filed or through mail. However, prepare your tax returns with a computer program or a hired professional or by yourself. It's important to make sure that you don't, either way that you're doing it, make sure that you're not rushing through the process. So many people just throw their stuff together and they just drop it off at their CPA. And so just like anything else, taxes can take a lot of time, of course, but again, make sure that you're paying attention, cross your T's, dot your I's, and at the end of the day, remember, it's all about your money. So
that's a really, really good tip, Mike. And I think, letting the listeners know again, we work with the best in our local market, and the cost to pay for a CPA, and really it's not a lot of work if you have a good CPA, because your CPA is going to give you a list of everything that you need to bring and watch for, because things change so much. So the cost that would cost to hire a CPA to do your taxes, definitely you're going to be able to make that up. I see people lose so much money yeah. in this area thinking that they can do it on their own.
I mean, here's the deal. Even if the cost of hiring the CPA was washed out by what you're getting back
mm-hmm.
by having that CPA, that would still be great. It's a wash and you yep. know that everything is done, but that's never happened to me, right? I always end up getting way much more money back because I took that little small expense to
absolutely,
hire the CPA.
Absolutely, without a doubt. So pick up the phone. Give us a call, 1-888-987-0570. Again, that's 1-888-987-0570. Or you can reach us online at themoneyhour.com, and we will hook you up with our guy, our CPA that represents all of our listeners. And Mike, I thought I would bring into Money Chat today to talk a little bit about credit, some myths out there. Because I think a lot of people are thinking about credit right now, might be a topic for new year and trying to make some changes to get your credit score up. Your credit score or FICO score determines the terms of your interest rate that you'll pay on credit cards, car loan. Obviously, Mike and I represent the mortgage arena, and it absolutely has a big effect on what's going to happen on mortgage, not only what your rate's going to be, but whether or not you're going to get the loan or not. A lot of employers now are looking at your FICO score. So you may not know that, but if you're out there looking for a job, that's part of, in some employers, that's a part of the hire process to take a look at what your credit is. So credit scores can affect a lot in our daily life. The scores vary from 300 to 850 being your high. And I wanted to go through the components of credit scoring. Your first component are past delinquents. So that's going to represent 35% of your credit score. So common sense is you don't want to pay your bills late because it's going to have a negative impact on your score. The second component to credit scoring is your debt to credit utilization or your debt ratio on revolving credit cards. Third component, that represents 30%. The third component is average age of credit. That represents 15%. And then there's mix of credit, which represents 10%, and your inquiries represent 10%. So those are the components that put together your credit score. So I wanted to talk about if we take a look at a couple of the myths in credit scoring, opting out of credit cards that are getting offered. Now, you may not want to get all of those offers out there, and that's, you know, you can obviously opt out for that reason, but a lot of people think because they're getting these advertisings in the mail that if they opt out, there's not going to be credit pulls. I don't know if you've ever wondered how they're pulling your credit report and finding out. They're all soft pulls. So they're not actually making a hard pull. So a soft pull doesn't affect your credit scores. Whereas a hard pull is when you're actually applying for some type of debt. That's going to be in that mix of inquiries, which again represents 10%. Of your credit score. If you do want to opt out, you can call 888-5-OPT-OUT or visit the optoutprescreen.com. Again, you can give us a call and we can get you connected in the right place for that. It's just, again, whether you want that. I personally like to get the mail, and not only because I'm in the business, so it's nice to see what type of marketing's out there, but as well, you can actually come across some really great deals that you're not thinking about. I'm not a coupon clipper. Dave kind of is, but it's nice to see what's out there. So I personally am not opt out. It's not going to affect your credit score. Closing accounts, this is a big one. To this day, I can't tell you how many clients come into our office to talk about mortgages, have already gone through some ideas of what they think might better their credit score. So here's a tip I would give you. If you think that you want to apply for a mortgage or any other type of debt, don't make the decision yourself and what you think is going to improve your credit score, because there is a lot of myths. You can go online and look for credit tips and these myths will be in there. And one of the biggest ones that I hear, consumers think that if they close out accounts that they're not open, that they're not using, that it's going to improve their credit score. Now, here's one of those things. Once you do it, you can't repair it. And remember, one of the components to credit scoring, which represents 15% of the credit score, is average age of credit. So basically, if you have anything on your credit report that's more than 2 years, regardless if you ever plan on using it again, you do not want to close those counts out. You can't reestablish age of credit. If you want to improve your credit score relatively quickly, this is an area that can help as well by getting on as an authorized user. So if you get on with a parent that has a Sears card that they've had for 10 years, see if they can add you on as an authorized user, and that can really help sometimes quickly as far as making an impact on your credit score. Now, also closing out accounts can have another effect, and that's on debt to credit utilization ratio. Now, this represents 30% of the credit pie or the chart, so it can have a huge impact. A lot of consumers that know about the debt to credit utilization ratio think that it's actually per credit card. So what this means is your ratio, you never want it over 30%. If it's over 50%, it's going to have a dramatic impact on your credit score, and it's a real quick impact. A lot of consumers think that it's based on per credit card. So let's say that you have a credit card that your credit limit is $5,000 and you owe $2,500 on it. That would be really bad because of the ratio. It's 50% of what's available to you, but it's actually not per credit card. It's on all your revolving accounts. So if you look at all the revolving accounts that you have, you want to make sure that you never owe more than 30% of the available credit to you. So when you're closing out accounts, you're actually affecting the debt to credit utilization ratio. So you want to have as much utilization available or credit that you're not using based on what's available to you. So it's not per credit card, it's on total revolving debt that you have. So an easy fix to this, obviously, if you can pay down the credit cards, but not everyone's in a position to do that. If you are in a position to increase your limits so that you have more available credit to make sure you're not, the first tier is 30%. Ideally, you want to be under 30% of what's available to you. It's really bad if you're over 50%. So if you're in a position that you can increase those limits to get that total revolving debt ratio to be under 30%, that would be the first thing. If not, if you can open another credit card. Now, people think opening new cards can affect your credit score. Yes, it does, because it's an inquiry, but the inquiry only represents 10% of your credit. The utilization ratio represents 30%. So it's always going to be better to make sure that you're ultimately staying at that. So an example would be if you owe $3,000 in revolving debt and you have credit limit of $10,000, that puts you at a 30% ratio. If you close down a card that has an available credit to you of $5,000, now you've taken that utilization to 60%, which is going to have a huge impact on your scores. Opening many accounts, if you don't have any credit, the old term, no credit is bad and sometimes worse than bad credit, which it is. You have to have established credit. What lenders are looking for, at least on the mortgage side, is they want to have four trade lines. Four trade lines would be four different types of accounts that you've had in the past that have been established for at least 12 months. So going out and opening a bunch of accounts can be a negative impact. You just want to get to that ratio of having enough debt to where you're establishing something. But it's not a quick fix, because something that you've just opened up is not going to be counted as a trade line until you've had that 12 months established in most situations. Also, another myth is paying off collections. Now, I'm hoping that you listen to me on this, is because it's going to sound a little bit bizarre to say don't pay off your collection accounts. But the reality is you don't want to pay them off unless you're if you're in process to close. Let's use mortgage for an example, because that's what Mike and I do. If you have a collection account out there, the bank is going to require that you pay that off prior to closing on your mortgage. So you're not going to leave an open account. You have to pay it off, but you want to make sure that you're paying that account off at closing. Don't pay it off prior to closing. Now, yes, lenders are going to do a soft pull right before your mortgage is closed. But remember, again, a soft pull has no impact on your credit score. Mortgage banks are not going to be doing hard credit pulls before they fund your loan. They're just going to do a soft pull to make sure that you don't have any new debt. If you pay off the collection, that's going to go back and re-age that account. So if you've had a collection account that was open more than 2 years ago, it sounds really strange, but trust me on this. It's going to re-age the account, which means that's going to affect your credit score because it's part of those components. If you pay it off after close or before at closing, so when you go into closing and you're paying it off, it's part of the conditions of closing the loan. You're going to bring that cash into closing with the cash that you need to purchase your home. If you're doing it at that time and they do a soft pull, it's not going to affect. Now, of course, it's going to affect your credit score when you go to pull your credit later, but it's not going to affect for mortgage purposes. So I think those are some good tips and things to watch for. And I guess the biggest advice that Mike and I would give you is just make sure you consult with a professional that understands how credit works before you make any changes. Coming up next on the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer, Janice Hammond, live right here in studio, Sunrise Financial, helping you prepare for your next visit with your financial advisor, what you need to have to get ready for the meeting to maximize it right here, 570 KVI after this short break.
Stop making emotional decisions when it comes to your financial portfolio. Talk to Janice Hammond at Sunrise Financial. Janice conducts complimentary dinner workshops each month. For details on the next event, visit sunrisefinancialservices.net or call 206-420-8520.
Hi, this is Janice Hammond with Sunrise Financial. If you'd like to get in touch with our office, the number is 206-420-8520 and our website is sunrisefinancialservices.net.
Free electricity from your roof? It's possible with solar energy. Here's Amy from Solterra Systems.
There's never been a better time to install solar in Washington, and yes, we do get enough sun. Incentives cover over 50% of the installation cost and zero down financing is available. Enjoy watching your meter run backwards this summer by installing solar now.
Go to useyourroof.com to find out how easy it can be. That's useyourroof.com or call 800-865-9005 to get your free site assessment from Solterra Systems.
Janice Hammond is a registered representative of and offers securities and advisory services through Madison Avenue Securities, Inc., MAS, a registered investment advisor, member of FINRA, and SIPC. MAS is not affiliated with Sunrise Financial Services, LLC.
This is the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Now, back to the show with local mortgage and finance experts Tina Mitchell and Mike Mercer.
Welcome back to the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer here on 570 KVI every Sunday at 2 p.m. The purpose of our show, of course, is to help our listeners understand what's really going on in our local real estate market and our financial arena. You can reach Tina and me at 1-888-987-0570 or online at themoneyhour.com. Again, that's 1-888-987-0570 or online at themoneyhour.com. So, Tina, are we ready for Janice?
I am. I've never heard you say 0570.
You haven't?
0570, I usually hear you say.
Oh, wow. You're right.
We got to just like spice it up a little bit. It's one of those days. So really excited to have Janice in studio. She works with a lot of our listeners in really helping them make the right decisions when it comes to their money. A financial advisor is one of those really, really important people that you need to have as part of your wealth management team. After 10 years in the financial service industry, Janice opened her company, Sunrise Financial Services, to help her clients avoid common mistakes made when planning for retirement. With her eyes towards the future, Janice recognized the need for a more conservative approach to investing and still outpace inflation. So she began to design plans that cater to unique needs of each individual who walks through the door of her firm, Sunrise Financial. And on that note, just talking about preparing Janice, our listeners, on what they need to do when they're coming in to meet their financial advisor, I'm excited to go through the list.
Yeah, it should be good information for you.
So Janice, what would you say is the most important thing to bring with you when you're going to meet your advisor for the first time?
I would say the most important thing by far is to bring your questions, whether it's your first meeting or your 10th visit with your advisor. What I've noticed is the people who are really interested in finding a financial professional that will help them achieve their financial goals ask the most and best questions.
And that's, I mean, we would do the same thing, Mike, for our clients as well, you know, really just coming prepared on what they, you know, what they want, and what their needs are. So that makes total sense, Janice. In your industry, in your arena, because it would be different than ours in mortgage, what are some of those commonly, frequently asked questions?
I would say the most common question by far is, what are your fees? Other variations, more specific questions of, do you charge for consultations or do you charge for planning? And one thing that's good for people to know is there are really two sides to the financial industry. One side consists of brokers who are primarily commission-based, and then the other side is advisors who are compensated by management or advisory fees. Our firm is compensated utilizing a combination of both, and because of this, we choose to offer complimentary consultations and plan design.
It's kind of like us. What's the most common question people ask us?
How much is my mortgage payment going to be?
What's your rate?
Oh.
What are the rates?
Yeah. Sometimes they ask that.
So fees seem to kind of, play an important role, I guess, in what people are looking for. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Are there any other questions, that you would recommend people to ask about when they're meeting somebody, an advisor?
One of the most important questions I would suggest asking is if the advisor you are meeting with is independent. Independent advisors offer a wide range of investment products, and because of my affiliation with my particular broker-dealer, we avoid the conflict of interest inherent in offering proprietary products. Another question would be, are you limited in the products that you can offer me? That's another way to ask that same question. Or are there any licenses that you do not hold that would prohibit you from offering certain products or investments? If so, it may mean that they hold only a securities license, or maybe they just hold an insurance license, not both. If they hold licenses for both, they will likely be able to offer products and investments for both your brokerage portion of your portfolio and the insurance portion of your portfolio. You see, there are some advisors that are only licensed to sell one or the other, and these advisors would probably be limited in the services, products, or investments that they can offer in comparison to someone who's licensed to offer both securities and insurance investment options.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of scary, Janice. I would imagine that there are quite a few people out there that don't realize that not every advisor actually has the products. And again, it's kind of similarity for us in mortgage.
Right.
A lot of clients don't know that really not every company would offer the same or be able to offer the same mm-hmm. product. So that's important. Janice, what's a question that very few people don't ask that they need to make sure they ask?
Well, some advisors might not like to be asked this particular question.
Tell us anyways.
But I think it is not a bad idea to inquire at least on a surface level, what investments they have or what products they own themselves. Meeting with an advisor for the first time is really kind of like a job interview. You really have to ask the tough questions that will reveal whether or not they will be a good fit for you. This is also why you should ask them how long they've been in the business and how long they plan to remain in the business. Now, just because an advisor has only been in the business a short time does not mean they aren't a good fit for you, as you might think. It might just be what you need is somebody that has a fresh perspective on diversifying or improving your portfolio. On the reverse side, just because they have been in the business for 50 years and have glasses and gray hair does not mean that they will be able to serve your financial needs the best either. In addition, another very important question to ask your advisor is what will happen if something happens to them or if they are no longer in the business. This is something few people ask about, and it happens more often than people think.
Yeah, that's a good point. Just because somebody's been doing it for a long time, like what if they're on their way out?
Yeah.
Or if they're bouncing around.
Janice is over
here.
Your
word's not mine.
Janice are over here laughing with the other guys that we have in studio because we do have some gray hair in studio today. Yeah. Gray
well,
hair
they,
and glasses.
They are awfully smart.
Yeah, I know.
Wisdom comes to mind. Great wisdom. So, speaking of change, talk about continuing education. How does that apply?
Many states have their own regulations, Washington State included, regarding continuing education for insurance, and many carriers have special requirements for agents in regards to product-specific training. But your advisor should attend, in addition to the required credits, they should attend financial conferences, trainings, and educational seminars on a regular basis to keep up with the changes in the industry. I mean, things change fast, and if you aren't aware of what's going on, it will be hard to serve your clients in the best way possible, I think. This can lead to having unhappy clients or even lead to clients leaving your firm, choosing to do business elsewhere. Which brings us to our next question, and many people find this difficult to ask as well, but it can be important. Find a way, however you're comfortable with, to ask your advisor if they have any unhappy clients. And if an advisor answers no right away, they're probably not being very truthful. you know, we have all had a client or two upset about the way a transaction was delayed or halted or handled. But what matters is the way the situation is handled from there that can determine if you keep the client or lose the client. And everyone should take time to do some due diligence regarding their advisor or when they plan to meet with. If they are a registered rep, then you should be able to look them up on the FINRA website or with the SEC. All of our clients are provided with instructions on how to do this. So if you have questions, you can call our office and we can email over a way for you to check on your personal financial advisor online. And I think that that's something you should do with everybody that you do business with.
So if you're listening today, pick up the phone, give our show a call, 1-888-987-0570. Again, that's 1-888-987-0570. Or go online to our web show page at themoneyhour.com and we will direct you with Janice. And I think if you take away anything from here, it's really important. If you are working with somebody, find out, how they rate and their services. So great resources, Janice. So aside from checking on the web, I mean, a lot of people find people they're working through Googling and lots of information on the web. But are there other things that our listeners should consider when searching for an advisor?
Oh, absolutely. I think there are quite a few things you should consider, like how accessible are they? Not just via location and how far you have to drive to see them, but do they return your phone calls or emails in a timely manner? Or do they seem to have time for you when you visit for an appointment? Is it easy to get in for an appointment? Another thing to consider is if they charge for consultations or appointments or annual reviews, that sort of thing. I think most people are like me and they don't really like fees very much. So anytime you can keep money in your pocket is a good thing. You should consider their file review process also. Do they do file reviews with you to keep you current with what's happening with your portfolio? And again, do they charge for those reviews? It is important to make sure your plan is working and still a good fit for you, and an annual review is an important part of that. And I don't want to sound like a broken record, but again, is the advisor you are considering both securities and insurance licensed? An advisor holding both the securities and insurance license will understand more about how to provide you with information about securities, investments, and insurance investments. And I think that that helps with a diversified portfolio. As we've talked about on previous shows, I believe in asset class diversification versus traditional diversification. And an advisor licensed in only one area or the other will have a hard time offering a truly diversified portfolio. And being independent, you have the opportunity to offer more things that are available than somebody that may not be licensed in both. And last but not least, another important aspect to consider when choosing an advisor is, do you feel like they listen to your needs and offer things that will meet your goals? I often have people come into my office and they have no idea what the investments in their portfolio are for or how they work. And I think that you should offer or have things that match your risk tolerance and goals for the future. And if you're not comfortable with them or the products they are offering, you'll probably end up having a trust issue with this advisor and regretting the investment decisions you made with them. Buyer's remorse is definitely not a good thing when you're dealing with your life savings. So you have to trust the person that you're working with.
So Janice, assuming that, you know, I've gone to your, the website that you recommended and I've checked out this potential advisor that I'm going to meet with and everything looks good, what should I be bringing? You mentioned this earlier, like, you know, documentation to that. What exactly, can you give some examples of what somebody would need to bring with them to be prepared?
Most advisors have things that they want you to bring that'll help them determine how they can help you. And I would plan on coming prepared with statements for your current investments, any insurance policies that you may have. You may be asked to bring tax statements or returns if you're looking to discuss investments that could potentially help reduce your tax liability, current and old 401k statements, Social Security amounts that you're anticipating at all ages, full retirement age 70 and 62, and your advisor can help you get those amounts if you don't know what they are, any pension amounts that you are anticipating, And it's really important to have an idea of when you're planning on retiring. It definitely gives the advisor a goal to try to attain. And one thing that people are not often prepared for, but if life insurance or long-term care is something you're interested in, be prepared to have a conversation about your health with your advisor, and it might include any medications that you're taking.
What if you have a listener that wants to come in and visit with you and just really isn't comfortable bringing all their documents at that first meeting? What should they do? What advice do you have?
That's okay. If you aren't comfortable bringing these things, I would say that you need to have a general idea of what your monthly expenses and your liabilities are. You guys are familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
A rough estimate of your annual income, roughly how much money you have and in what type of investments. And are there any unique circumstances in your family that you want to talk about? Maybe you have a crazy ex or a troubled child. Those kind of things are important to plan for, and then keep in mind for your advisor to really get a sense of your current situation. They will at some point need to see current and accurate detailed snapshots of your assets, and in order to do this, you'll need to bring everything mentioned previously. But when you're just in the interview process, bring what you're comfortable with.
Oh, Janice, that is the sign. Our time is up. We need a few more minutes or a few more shows with you. As always, thank you so much for bringing your expert advice in, and thanks for taking care of our listeners. I really, really appreciate everything that you've done
sure.
for them.
Sure, thanks. Yeah, thanks
good
for having
seeing you again,
me.
Janice.
Yeah, you do.
Uh-huh.
Coming up next on the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer, your Pierce County, Tacoma real estate experts, Jim Swanson and Eric Tinglem with Windermere Professional Partners. You won't want to miss their market review and tips on navigating through this amazing real estate market opportunities that we have today. Right here, 570 KVI, coming up next.
Are you behind on your mortgage payments and unsure about the road ahead? Magnum Law Group helps families just like yours navigate through the foreclosure avoidance process. Are you underwater on your home and unsure what to do? Magnum Law Group will help you understand your options. Are you facing foreclosure and need to stop a trustee sale? Magnum Law Group has success in doing this and may be able to help you too. If you're tired of dealing with the banks and getting turned down for loan modification, Magnum Law Group will take on the banks for you and lead you through the process for the best possible outcome. They lead the competition with superior knowledge and expertise.
This is Craig from Magnum. You can reach us at 425-605-6393 or at www.magnumlawgroup.com. See you at the next seminar.
Stop making emotional decisions when it comes to your financial portfolio. Talk to Janice Hammond at Sunrise Financial. Janice conducts complimentary dinner workshops each month. For details on the next event, visit sunrisefinancialservices.net or call 206-420-8520.
Hi, this is Janice Hammond with Sunrise Financial. If you'd like to get in touch with our office, the number is 206-420-8520, and our website is sunrisefinancialservices.net.
This is the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Now, back to the show with local mortgage and finance experts Tina Mitchell and Mike Mercer.
Welcome back to the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer here on 570 KVI every Sunday at 2 p.m. The purpose of our show is to help our listeners understand what's really going on in our local real estate market and our financial arena. You can reach Tina and me at 1-888-987-0570 or online at themoneyhour.com. Again, that's 1-888-987-0570 or online at themoneyhour.com.
And excited to have back in studio Jim Swanson and Eric Tinglem. We are going to talk about Pierce County, Tacoma real estate market, everything that's going on in the market, some techniques and some tricks to know how to navigate through it. They're both with Windermere Professional Partners in Tacoma. Jim and Eric are experts in the Tacoma and Pierce County real estate markets. They're both well-versed in short sales and bank-owned properties. Seattle Magazine Five-Star Real Estate Agent Award 2011 and ranked in the top 50 brokers in Pierce County by transactions, count, and sales volume for 2011. They have done a lot of business in that market. So excited to have them both in studio. Thanks, you guys, for coming in.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us again. That's great.
Yeah, first time here on 570 KVI.
That's right. These are nice digs.
Yeah, pretty nice.
That's
we
what
got
I'm
a window
saying.
And everything.
Every time you introduce us, we tear up.
Yeah, special.
We got Kleenex.
Special.
We got Kleenex. So let's talk about the residential market for, I guess, distressed and non-distressed properties. What's going on?
Well, we like to look at statistics because we hear media. One day they'll say one thing, and the next day they'll say the exact opposite. So we like to break down the statistics so we can actually see what's truly happening, because numbers really don't lie when you look at them. So we look at the market as an overall market, and then we also look at segments in the distressed industry, meaning bank-owned short sales. And then we also look at the non-distressed market to see how that market varies from the other markets. So I'll just compare this year over last year in the overall market. Our active listing count is down 31.5% this January over last January.
And that's overall categories.
That's the overall market. Wow. Pending sales are up 56%. Closed sales are up 10.3%. And rather than looking at a median price, I'm looking at average cost per square foot is up $10 from $99 to $109. And that's across the county in the whole market. The bank-owned market, we're seeing the active listings are down 45%. Pendings are down 25.7%. Closed sales are down 50%. The price per foot is down about $9 a foot. Up $9 a foot, excuse me. On the short sale side, our active listings are down 51.7%, but our pendings are up 285%. Closed sales are up 36%, and our price per foot on this category is down about 8%. This is our big growth category right now is short sales.
Short sales, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Eric had a couple of words about this.
Yeah, if you take a look at the extreme increase in pending sales up 285%, and then you take a look at the fact that approximately 40% of our overall market is represented by short sale negotiations, it's very clear that people are starting to get the fact that this bubble, this trend is not going to be around much longer. We're seeing people come to the market that maybe otherwise were kind of sitting on the sidelines and saying, well, when's a good time and when's a good time? And certainly you guys know, given the fact that we have historic low interest rates, certainly we would have anticipated with those rates being as low as they are, we would have seen this level of activity a lot sooner. In
sure.
fact, we have not. And now just in the past couple months,
right.
we are in situations where we're having multiple offers on many properties.
So this time last year, we were talking about shadow inventory. And if you're listening, and what shadow inventory is basically properties that haven't hit the market yet. And there's different components, people that were late on their mortgage, that chances are they're not going to be able to keep their home. Bank-owned properties that haven't hit the market yet, and people that are in the middle of the foreclosure process have not completed it. But it's funny how time changes, and what everybody's talking about as a risk turns into now would be actually a little bit of a blessing. Where's the shadow inventory? Is it going to hit the market? Is it going to have an impact? I mean, obviously, if some of these properties came to market, it would be a blessing, because right now we're short inventory. So what do you guys think about this?
Well, let me just tell you how short we are, because that's a good observation.
That's a good comment.
How short are we
how
on the shorts?
How short are we?
We're way short. Our current inventory total in Pierce County is 2,642. And Jim, didn't you say it was down last year? It was what? What's our number there?
3855.
3855. Now compare that against the 07 high of 8,900 homes.
Wow.
So we are down significantly in terms of available inventory.
Now, I don't know if you have this number with you, but if you do, it would be great. To what's the comparison of buyers that are trying to all get that? So we know the inventory is short, but isn't the buyers, there's a lot more buyers as well?
No, quite to the contrary. The
really?
Buying has stayed fairly consistent. You would, again, anticipate that we'd have seen more buyers entering the market.
Uh-huh.
Jim has some statistics that will show that in Pierce County, our activity, or when you hear, you know, this rather dramatic increase in activity, is over a fairly narrow band of price points.
Okay.
The higher you go, it just falls off exponentially. But back to your original question, you were asking about shadow inventory.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's pretty clear that the banks have chosen not to proceed with many, many foreclosures. People have been sitting in homes for a long time.
Yep.
And candidly, it's just that reserve requirement rule that, you know, the FDIC imposes on banks. Banks don't want to be realtors.
Yeah.
And they don't want that REO or that real estate owned property. I think Jim has some statistics in that regard.
First, let's just clear up what shadow inventory is. According to Glenn Krellen, who is the Associate Director for Research at the UAW, at the Rundstad Center for Real Estate Studies, shadow inventory represents properties that have been taken back by the lending institutions, but for whatever reason have not yet been put back on the market.
Mm-hmm. The REOs.
National Association of Realtors in March of 2011 had research showing that Washington State had 28 months of shadow inventory to look forward to. But by the third quarter of 2012, the same source had let us know that we now have 4 months of shadow inventory, which is
high.
Mostly we had the Foreclosure Fairness Act come in, which stalled a lot of foreclosures. Mm-hmm. There's still some foreclosures that will happen, but it's less than there was before.
But part of the shadow inventory as well is the people that actually haven't lost their homes yet.
That's correct.
It's, you know, when you look at statistics, and it's funny how time changes, and not funny, but statistics have always been people that are 90 days late on their mortgage, 97% of them are going to lose their home. Well, that's not the case anymore. Those statistics are going to change. It'll be interesting to see how it pans out because the banks are doing so much modification with the National Mortgage Settlement Act that came out in March of last year. But that was a big part of the shadow inventory, as well as people in foreclosure that haven't lost their home yet. But I think that's all changed because of the modifications and what the banks are doing.
These specific statistics do not include the ones that are not foreclosed yet.
Got it. Okay.
Interesting. So what are you guys seeing as far as cash buyers?
Yeah, our cash buyer pool has gone up for a couple of different reasons. But for statistical reasons, we can tell you that in January of 2013, we saw 21.6% of all closed sales were those of cash buyers, whereas in January of 2012, it was 18.1%. If you just look at the numbers January 12 over January 13, that number was up 31.6% from 95 sales to 125 sales.
And the other thing that we're seeing, when we talk cash buyers, you know, traditionally we're thinking, you know, the Joneses have salted away X number of dollars and now they're going to pick up maybe a rental property. We're seeing hedge funds come in. We're seeing big, big, big bank buyers coming into this market. And I would just say that, you know, when you take a look at their thinking, that's something we need to consider because we are going to see a really huge rebound in this market.
Yeah.
Big money is smart money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're going to see some things that are pretty dramatic.
That's an excellent point. I mean, there's a reason why Warren Buffett is buying a national real estate company, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we all know when those cash buyers come in, it's an indicator of what's happening in the market. I personally, there needs to be a lot more I know that in some cases when we're talking about like the Fannie Mae owned properties, they do have some restriction at these cash buyers. But until this inventory gets built up, I mean, that's a whole nother topic and conversation for a studio. But all these big bulk cash purchases coming in, I totally disagree with it.
So we've talked a little bit about the, the lack of inventory. You know, if buyers don't know what's really happening or what's coming into the market, you know, what's your take on how quickly they're going to figure it out?
Oh, I have some people that I'm working with right now, and we've been in 2-3 multiple offer situations and lost on all three. And of course, my take on it is they've seen way too much TV and one too many infomercials, and so the reality is that people that have a need to be very proactive right now.
Mm-hmm.
They need to bring in their best offer to start with. The idea that we're going to get something for free and that the seller is going to pay all of our closing costs. Obviously, I'm saying that a bit tongue-in-cheek, but that just is no longer the case.
Yeah, you have to listen to your representation. We have a lot of clients working with Eric and Jim, and that's what you hire them for. You hire for their expertise, understand what's happening in the market, because you got to go in there and you got to fight, otherwise you're going to get bruised before you figure it out. Let's talk about new construction. What's happening in the new construction market, and what is this? What are the trends showing as far as how this affecting the market today?
New construction's in a relative boom as well. In 2012, January, we saw 44 new homes close in Pierce County. In this January, we saw 110. It's up 150% year over year. Builders continue to do a really good job making appealing homes that people can actually afford still.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, too, if you're thinking of selling, here's a call to action. I mean, help me if I've got wrong advice here, but as a seller, if you're thinking of selling, now is a time to do it before this new construction really starts hitting, because those shiny new homes and having to compete against them, would you agree?
I do agree with now being a time to sell. For years, we kept saying it's a great time to buy.
Mm-hmm.
It is a great time to sell, but be careful on the multiple offer. The trend there seems to be to think that you can just charge a higher price for your house. If you're not priced properly, you will not experience multiple offers. And so I would just caution you to be realistic with your pricing when you list a house and listen to your agent. And
That is such an excellent point. You've got to price right. Otherwise,
it's got to get appraised.
I mean, well, that is the point, because what I've told any number of my buyers where we've gone in, I've told them we're protected by our appraisal.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't appraise, and by the way, appraisals are all over the map. I mean, they're going through some of the same difficult times trying to make sense of this market that those of us professionals are. So there's great opportunity there to sell, but you're not going to be able to, as Jim was saying, you're not going to be able to get that premium. Now, are you going to get a bump? Yes, I think so.
Here's the hard facts on the non-distressed market. Year over year, the closed sales price is up 3.5% per foot. So guess what that is? That's 3 to 4%, which is our long-term average of appreciation of home ownership.
Okay.
That's
okay.
A safe, sustainable number. And it kind of puts it in perspective, where if you think you're going to get 15% more this year over last year, you're probably going to have a rude awakening.
So anything else that you guys, I know a big part of what you guys do is to educate your clients and to basically, you know, set them up with the proper expectations. What else, what other advice are you guys giving your clients, whether they're buyers or sellers?
Well, I think the first advice that I give everyone, let's look at first-time homebuyers, and both Jim and I have a lot of first-time homebuyers. A lot of veterans,
yep,
as well.
Mm-hmm.
When they're looking at that home, I'm not encouraging them to max out their buying potential. I'm telling them oftentimes to look at the home that they're buying, the first home, maybe as your first rental property.
Right.
And when we look at a value, I'm telling my clients that, you know, we want to know that if anything happens to you on down the road, God forbid, that your property can be converted to a rental and you're positive in your cash flow. We still see that a great deal right now with these, mm-hmm, incredible interest rates.
So going back to the VA, because I've just talked with clients of yours last night and got them approved and ready to go for VA financing. And mm-hmm, it's different with VA right now than what it used to be when people are buying and selling, because a few years ago they'd have equity in their home and now they're not. So having the ability to be able to do zero down again, are you running into any challenges on the timing for someone that has a VA loan right now that's selling and going to wanting to use VA financing again, that the eligibility is going to take place in time?
Well, the eligibility is always, you know, is always a question, but no, mm-hmm, I mean, we can, as long as we close, you know, and I would defer to you,
uh-huh,
oftentimes in that question, but if we can have a simultaneous close, we then can usually go into a second VA product.
The reality of our VA market in the last few years has not been VA sellers that then buy again.
Mm-hmm.
Our VA sellers have been mostly people with PCS orders that have to leave for Germany or Italy or wherever, and we have to short sell their home. And so they're not buying for a couple of years. So it hasn't been much of a problem, but we expect that will be more of an issue again moving forward.
Sure, sure.
PCS, permanent change of station, leaving the area.
Okay, mm-hmm, thank you.
You bet.
I didn't know what that meant.
Well, we don't have a lot of buyers in our market in King County. We don't have a lot that are VA, but
yeah. Well, yeah. Well, speaking of that, what do you guys? What's your outlook for Tacoma and Pierce County for this coming year?
Well, according to some media sources, it's going to be up to a 25% gain, which
that's kind of scary.
Yeah, we just don't think that's ever going to happen. It's not sustainable. It's very unhealthy. Mm-hmm. Pierce County and Tacoma and Seattle have made several national lists in the top 10 for the coming year, like number 6. We're going to have stuff on our website that can be shown, because it's so hard to see it on the radio. But I think our outlook is that if we can sustain another 3 or 4% real non-distressed value growth over the next year that we'll probably be pretty happy in Pierce County because it won't be a damaging bubble like it was before.
Sure. And we were also talking when we were preparing for the show a little bit about the Forbes article and the top 10 best housing markets. Mm-hmm. What'd you find in there?
Well, Seattle is number six.
Right? Yeah. Awesome.
And the way it usually rolls, we're, you know, Pierce County, we're the ugly stepchild. And so, you know, we generally lag behind the Seattle market. So it's actually encouraging for us.
But at least you can see what's coming up.
Well,
that's awesome.
You know, we tell folks, you know, give me 40 minutes and I'll give you $200,000.
Yeah.
You know, all you got to do is a little bit of a commute and we'll take care of you.
Yeah, awesome.
You'll get a lot more in our market than you will up here.
Absolutely.
But again, you see that lag and then you see the response because the buying pressure goes south as you start to see, you know, the homes disappear in this market.
Yeah. Great information, both of you. Thank you so much for coming in studio. Right. It's always nice seeing you face to face.
Thanks for having us in.
Yeah, thanks
for
being
visit you more often over on the South End.
Oh, we love it. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. This is Mike Mercer signing off for the Mortgage Diva, Ms. Tina Mitchell.
And it is the end of the show, end of our Sunday show. This is Tina Mitchell signing off for the Mortgage Master, Mike Mercer. Enjoy your Sunday. Thanks for being here. Please come back next Sunday right here on 570 KVI.
You guys have a great week.
Free electricity from your roof? It's possible with solar energy. Here's Amy from Solterra Systems.
There's never been a better time to install solar in Washington, and yes, we do get enough sun. Incentives cover over 50% of the installation cost and zero down financing is available. Enjoy watching your meter run backwards this summer by installing solar now.
Go to useyourroof.com to find out how easy it can be. That's useyourroof.com or call 800-865-9005 to get your free site assessment from Solterra Systems.